bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special Christmas edition of the Photo Show. I'm Kyle Swagger. It's good to be back.
It's only just
for an hour. Yes, we do have the original panel now, don't we?
The original host and the original panel were all here.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is a Christmas miracle.
Serendipity. We don't look a day older. We looked this bad a year ago.
We just feel it.
As we were saying, original panel, there on my left, right, I can't really see right now, Mr. Ewan Rankin, who just spent $4,000.
Pounds even, $6,000.
Oh, so about $6,000. Oh, lovely. So what toys did you get?
I got a 6D with a 24-105 lens, and I got a 27-inch Apple monitor yesterday, the cinema display, which looks super gorgeous.
Yeah, I've seen the tweet. But I got to tell you, the printer's what stood out for me.
The printer, the piece of crap, £108.
Yeah. But you said it was the best £100 you've ever
spent. It is. It's a very good printer. And there's a place online called Silverline on Amazon, which does print cartridges for £2 a pop. So instead of buying the 30 quid a colour job for 2 quid, you get for 20 quid, you get 10 cartridges. So can't go wrong.
It's a no-brainer, pretty much, yeah. next to Ewan, of course, we've got Mr. Alex G. Fox. Now, if Ewan has spent $6,000 or £4,000, you spent, what, about £12,000 this week?
Yeah, but only on stuff I don't need, though.
Okay.
What did you buy, Alex?
Just confirming.
No, that mustn't tell you. It's all to be unwrapped on Christmas Day. That's the trouble.
Oh, God.
Well, it was your wife's birthday the other day, wasn't it?
It was. And don't tell anyone, but she's older than me. 9 days.
She likes the young ones.
Well, you know, you can't blame her, can you?
No.
You've seen me. You know she couldn't resist.
No, especially with the beard.
It's Christmas. Yes. I wanted to look like Ewan.
Ho, ho, ho.
There has been a debate this week if Ewan's getting rid of the beard or not. We shall probably see on the Mac Show later.
Well, the thing is, I found a picture of me with a bit of stubble earlier on. And I just look old and haggard when I get a tiny bit of stubble. Whereas with this, I can carry it off now. It's long enough, so I'm struggling. Yeah,
manly. We're supposed to have Chris Forsman, Mr. Fors Mac, on Twitter. I think he's sleeping. We haven't seen him tweet. And it's not like Chris not to tweet. He usually tweets about literally every single thing, every step he takes. But maybe he'll chime in a bit. Have you heard anything from him, Ewan?
No, if he comes, he comes. We'll get on with it. Don't worry.
Okay. All right, let's do it now. The week in photo news. The big one we got to start off with, guys, is Instagram.
What happened?
Well, first and foremost, before we get into the major screw-up that it became, they have backpedaled now. They have went back to their terms of service or conditions, whatever the heck you want to call it, from 2010. So apparently they are not going to be selling your photos now. But what the hell were they thinking?
Well, what everyone else is thinking. I mean, this is the one thing that really kind of gets me a little bit annoyed, is that people do not realize that you throw any images into the cloud, they are no longer yours to control to a large degree. You're relying on the goodwill of the service that you've put it up, because within all of the contracts and terms and conditions that you get for doing it and for using their service, you say that they can do whatever they want with your image. Now, they probably do it so that they can cover their asses, so that you're not going to sue them for misappropriation of it if they move it or lose it off a server or something. But the actual fact is, you're telling them they can do what they want with your image, and that includes sell it. If they want to pass it on, there's loads of photo competitions. If you look at the small print in all the photo competitions where you submit an image, it says it's their image to do what they want with, and they sell them afterwards if they want to. There's nothing you can do to stop them. This is not new. It just happens that Instagram had the balls to type it.
Yeah, you know, Flickr's been doing this. And I think when you signed up for Flickr a long time ago, it's pretty much the same.
Yep.
The same thing. But both of you guys, do you use Instagram, Ewan?
No, I've got an account, but I've put one picture up. I think I use Flickr now. I've just signed up for my own Flickr account, I had the one for the Bagel Tech photo show.
Oh, the Bagel Tech carried days on.
And there's the little group there that ran, the Bagel Tech photo group that still people post to. But I've started my own URL just to put a couple of pictures up. I put my Starry Sky up the other night and that kind of stuff. So,
what about you, Alex? You use Instagram at all?
No, I mean, I do use I use various sort of cloud computing for images, but one of the clouds is my very own server, which I use purely because of I need access to work. And if I'm not sitting in front of my computer, I need to get it. So I have one version on a private server in the cloud, and I've got another one on a physical server, which I own, that runs off of my own network. So, yes, I have cloud, if you like, cloud photography, and I can give people access to anything I've ever shot via password and all the very expensive, stupid things that I've paid for. But I don't have anything. I mean, I've got a few things on the Bagel Tech, as it was, photo. But that's purely because we might discuss something, a type of picture. And if I happen to be out and I manage to achieve what we were talking about, I've put it up and I'll put a link. You know, remember that. Whatever we were talking about, pinhole camera. Well, there was a series I did. I turned my front room into a form of pinhole camera. It was camera obscura, really, but it was just to demonstrate the simplicity of getting an image. So I did that, you know, and I put the pictures up because of, you know, a lot of people don't understand the very simple basics of photography. And when you see something like that, it sort of blows your mind and you think, wow, all the tens of thousands of pounds people play to actually get an image is a piece of cake. But to take this Instagram sharing thingy a little bit further, I don't know how aware people are, but when you put anything on an auction, and I'm not just meaning an auction site on the internet, if you go to, I mean, I can say it because it's true, Sotheby's, Christie's, Bonhams, any of the major UK auction houses, if you give them a painting or whatever object it is to put in their catalogue, they own the image rights to that item when you give it to them. So if you've got a painting and Christie's put it in their catalogue, they have their own image bank. They sell those images, the reproductions of and everything off of their own back, because at that point they own the image right. So, you know, even on circumstances like that, you don't own the image of stuff that you actually own. So, you know, it's just an obvious extension of that. It's just people don't realize how little of what they perceive as their property they actually own in image terms.
Don't you think, though, maybe Instagram, Flickr, these kind of places, we're banking on that? Now, I agree with you, and it's talking about they finally had the balls to actually go out and type it. But it's the same thing when we're talking about Facebook, who happens to have just bought Instagram not too many months ago. And do you think that they're counting on those kind of people saying, oh, the, you know, they don't care. They're just posting pictures of their food or they're doing these kind of things and what they don't know won't hurt them. I mean, do you see it that way? I mean, you and you're a little bit more in context with the law and these kind of things.
No, I think what you've got to realize is that the terms and conditions that Sotheby's or whoever would do would be about reproduction, because there'd be a debate about whether I actually lost ownership of the image, but certainly I will lose control of what they do with that image. Now, if they decide to sell it, that's something I would say is probably going to be a very heavy debate, and I'd probably lose. But in terms of reproduction, which is where your copyright goes to, the reproductive element, they have to take that away from you, otherwise they wouldn't be able to print it in a brochure, as Alex says. They wouldn't be able to publish it on the internet, move the file physically somewhere else onto a different server if they needed to manage the balance or something like that. So there's a certain element that the terms and conditions that the sites have got are necessities for the purpose of showing it, otherwise they couldn't show it. But Instagram just kind of explicitly said what most of the other sites would probably do if they wanted to anyway. I don't think there's an issue with it either. If you put it on the net, you lose it, and you should know that before you even start. Sorry, Alex.
No, I was just going to say very quickly, I tweeted this out and didn't get much of a response, but I honestly believe that it's as simple as Facebook being the bigger company, the holding company, etc. I think it was a test. It was to test to see if Facebook wanted to do that on a larger scale, e.g. change their terms and conditions, what sort of reaction would they get? So I think they put it out on Instagram just to basically have a very, very quick way of finding out what the public opinion would be if they decided to go along that way.
It's quite, the damage it's quite to possible. The brand would be less as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, and just today, I mean, they rolled out new privacy settings, you know, speaking of Facebook, about how to finally actually untag yourself in photos that, you know, why were you there in the first place, or you hated that picture. So maybe that's also, I don't know if they're directly linked or not, but somewhat of a response to this backlash that's taken to Instagram. Mm.
But, you know, all of these companies, I mean, people say, you know, if you don't know what the product is, you're the product. The reason they succeed is purely on public goodwill. I mean, that's how it works. You know, if it works both ways. If you don't know what the product is, you're the product. And if you haven't paid for it, you're the product. That only works for goodwill. And as much as big, enormous companies like Facebook and Instagram to an extent and Twitter and all the rest of it, it won't take very long to annoy enough people that it will, that the swell will be so large that if someone like Ewan's got loads of followers, Ewan's, you know, known alongside Twitter. If Ewan made a stand and said, look, I'm going to announce to everyone I'm going to app.net because I've really, really had enough. And if a couple of people that, you know, the big people he followed, you take your followers with you. So it might only be 3 or 4 or 5, then 10, then 100, but then you're talking about thousands to millions. So they will lose advertising revenue like you wouldn't believe, because it's that, you know, it's what the people that give them their stuff for, because you're giving them something for free as well as receiving something for free. Don't forget that. Yeah. Your information, you're giving it to them for free. So it is a two-way street. So they do have to be careful. You know, the moment they get too arrogant, someone will come along that isn't arrogant, or someone will come along that's completely honest. They'll say, we're Instagram, we're going to charge you $20 a year, but, you know, that's where we're making our money and we're not going to do anything else. You know, there's going to be an awful lot of people that would jump ship on principle.
Yeah, I think the other thing is to consider as well, when you put something online, there's a lot of people are going to use that regardless. And I mean, if you look at the banners that are on our website, I go for stuff that's Creative Commons and I bother to search for stuff that's free to use. And I've used a couple of images that are licensed, but they're promoting a product and they're owned by the product promoter. So, for example, like on a James Bond episode of the Daily Show, I would use a James Bond image that's owned by Warner Brothers or some other company, but then I'm promoting their product, and if they want to sue me for that, they'd have a hard time. You know, it's that knowledge of, but I grab the image from wherever I want for that kind of purpose. But there's people out there that don't look for Creative Commons. They find an image on Flickr, they screen capture it, and they use it. All the pictures that I've put up of the rugby club for, you know, the guys to look at, they've all got them on their Twitter profiles, and all they've done is screen capture them. And one of the things that annoys me about that is not the fact that they've stolen the image, but I'm like, it looks crap. Just send me an email. I'll send you the frigging original.
Yeah, there is that, funny enough. That's my objection to so much of the work that I do that's stolen. If you're going to steal it, could you at least make it look nice?
Kind of goes back to the way music is. I mean, when you get horrible sounding MP3s that are, you know, pirated and these things, you know, you get independent musicians saying the same thing. At least give them a high quality copy, for God's sake. So.
Exactly.
Well, I good on Instagram, though, that they went back on this, but I don't think they had a choice, honestly. I think there would have been a lot of people abandoning it. But I honestly, at the end of the day, I didn't care. I think I remember telling somebody on Twitter, I said, I have an internet connection, so I've already sold my soul anyway, so what's the point?
Exactly.
Well, there we go.
Speaking of selling our souls, Kodak has been acquired by Apple.
Oh, that was
patents,
really
that
good.
Is.
That really was good. Oh, well done.
Mr. Segway is back.
Oh, that was spectacular.
The patents include by Apple, Google, and notably Facebook again has popped up in here. Why? I mean, we're talking about capturing, manipulating, sharing of digital photographs, what these patents have to do with. I mean, I can see possibly Apple, possibly Facebook. What would Google have to do with wanting these patents, Alex?
Well, the simple thing is they all probably have to pay a license for these patents anyway, because of anything they produce. What a lot of people are sort of not aware of, Kodak not only were film, but Kodak were digital imaging. Kodak invented the beginning of practically everything you use in every camera you've got. The way the light was captured, the whole idea of sensors, it's Kodak.
Yeah.
And that's where it started. And everything you do, you know, if you go and make a camera tomorrow, you are paying a license. When you go and buy a sensor, if you go and buy a microchip to build your own computer, part of that payment you're making for that microchip is going to Intel, whoever invented that original patent. It's all sorted out without you as the customer knowing about it. But people like Facebook, Google, Apple, and all the people that have anything to do with photos and, you know, the digital movement of photos, they are paying a license every time they use certain things. And as far as they're concerned, it makes financial sense just to own those patents so that they don't have to pay anymore. I don't know what Facebook or Apple or any of these people pay, but they might pay £10 million a month for the use of the patents that that Kodak held. Yeah.
Really?
But they hold everything. You know, everything that happened before, there's a few developments that happened in the last few years, but very, very few of anything that you've got in a camera hadn't been patented by Kodak 15, 20 years ago. It's much the same as you're going to have with Apple in 10 years' time. You'll find these machines out there in 10 years' time that bear no resemblance to an iPad or an iPhone, but they will be using things that Apple patented 20 years earlier, and that's what these people are using. It's like the JPEG format. People are still having to pay. I think that's still licensed, isn't it, JPEG?
And it's Joint Photographics Enterprise Group.
Yeah. So things you don't realize, but you are paying for in other ways. Big companies that use JPEG, say, to move things around, or they something like Google with the way they, when you upload something to YouTube, the whatever, you know, the conversion process, which is done on the fly, very probably was designed by Kodak. So,
well, go ahead, Alex. Sorry.
No, just saying. So they are already paying millions of dollars every year just for the use of this stuff. So it makes sense to own it. Because it's like, why rent your house if you can afford to buy it?
The thing with this is it's a consortium, though, isn't it? It's been purchased by this firm, Venture something or other, Intellectual Ventures, and they're representing Apple, Google, Facebook, Samsung, RIM, Adobe, HTC, Fujifilm, Highway, Amazon, Shutterfly, and Microsoft. So, I mean, all of these, as Alex says, all of these people are paying licenses anyway to Kodak for functions.
Tesco's, Walmart, NASA, who else?
Yeah, no, it's just those 12. But the point is, they're saving money by the process. That's the point. So
yeah, the beauty of the deal is you would never get all those people sitting around a table to agree to anything. But if you've got one company that says, right, if we buy it, and you all chip in equal amounts at the end of the day, then you don't have to pay a license anymore. That's why you've got the third party that's gone in and done it on their behalf. They're probably getting a 10% commission on top of it, and that's the end of the deal. But the most important thing of this story, we will still have Kodak next year. And to me, as the innovators for all of photography, I really, really hope, and it might just be, you know, historical love of the company and what Eastman Kodak produced, photography would not be photography if Kodak wasn't still here. So I don't care what they paid. As long as Kodak's there next year, I'm going to be a happier person for that.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, talking about the history and just learning that from you, Alex, I had no idea just how deep Kodak actually went. But being that said, why is Kodak in the position it's actually in now? I mean, if people are paying in so much amount of money per month to have licenses for these things, to acquire the patents from Kodak, how did Kodak end in such financial jeopardy to begin with?
They're a dinosaur.
Yeah, the film.
The world changed.
I mean, there was me that paid for film. That was it. I couldn't keep the company going on my own. But even with the patents, they did make some beautiful cameras. I reckon 10 years ago, there was a really big toss-up for me whether I went Nikon or Kodak. Thankfully, financially, I went Nikon. But Kodak were making the most... They were amazingly ahead of their time for DSLRs. They were the first to have ambient light meters built into the camera, which might mean nothing to the average photographer. But when you're shooting in mixed light and you're using your own tungsten lighting, it had a little window, if you like, in the top of the camera that read the color of the ambient light in the room, and it subtracted that from the color of the picture, and it gave you a better, a finished color representation of what you shot. For me, that saved me days worth of work in the old days, because nowadays you shoot in RAW, you use a color card and it gives you the correct color. You know, you have no idea how difficult it was to get the correct color before you had the software that did it for you. Well, Kodak, they were the only camera that could do it for you. They were so far ahead of everyone. But what they did, everything that was worthwhile, they sold on or they licensed. So they licensed that great idea to, I think Sony seemed to get that next. So they licensed it to Sony. But Sony, being such a brilliant electronics company, added to it. They added things that Kodak never could. Kodak were brilliant at the photography. But then you had places like Sony and Fuji, not even Nikon and Canon at the time, that added things that were like, oh, wow, well, why buy Kodak when you can buy a Fuji for quarter the price and it's giving you the same equivalent? And that's where they went wrong. You know, they brought out some really cheap point-and-shoots, which were quite good, but they had to have docking stations. What was the point of having those docking stations? Everyone else said, no, just have a USB. No, with Kodak, you had to have Kodak software. You had to have Kodak docking stations. You know, they still, until, when was the last Kodak print in a chemist when? It was sometime last year, I think we reported on it. You had to use a licensed Kodak print setup in the chemist shop to be able to get your prints done. Everyone else, like Fuji, they said, here you go, do that. You know, no, you don't have to have a, you don't have to have a Kodak fridge. You don't have to have a Fuji fridge. You know, they sold it on, they made it easy, where Kodak made everything, they tied your hands. Even for me buying film, do you know how hard it was to buy film when Kodak were big? They wouldn't sell directly to me. They wouldn't even sell direct to the major importers. You had to get together a consortium to get anything directly from Kodak. They made life so difficult.
What's really funny about this, though, Alex, and I know Ewan's got to be thinking the same question. We're going to wrap this up really, and we'll go on to one little story that's kind of funny, but doesn't this sound like a lot like Apple?
I hope not, because I think there'll be a lot of people really upset if Apple go the way of Kodak. Yeah. But that was my thing when Kodak went into administration. You know what? 20 years ago, if I'd have said Kodak are going to go into administration, people would have laughed at me the same as if I said in 20 years' time Apple will. So just bear that in mind, Apple, because there's nobody too big that somebody else can't come in and do it. Maybe not as good, but so much cheaper that people forget about quality.
You want to add anything, Ewan?
No, I mean, excuse me. I think the only problem you get with...
I think that summed it up, actually.
No, I just think the only thing is when you get in a bastardized environment like that, you become... bastardized, you become introvert, you see what's in your sphere and you don't look outside. And I think that's the problem that you got with Kodak, is that they created the walled garden process, so they created the controlling mechanism and the cartelism of what they had, but then they didn't look around them and they didn't see that the market had changed completely, and they reacted too slowly. That's it.
Really is.
Actually, yeah, at the end of the day, it's a bit of a pity, but like Alex said, at least he'll still be around. Well, let's do one more. I just have to do this one, Ewan, just because of what it actually says in the doc. This won't take us very long, but it's supposed to be rule of thirds for your browser, but for some reason in the photo documents, it says rule of turds.
I think that was Ewan's thoughts on it without even having to speak.
So what are the rule of turds, Ewan?
What is the rule of thirds? Well, I mean, it's you, the picture says it all. If you're watching the video, you know, you take your image and you split it into nine quadrants or nine quadrant, it can't be quadrant, squares, and then you try and get points of interest to line up along the third point. Rule of thirds is great if you want to learn how to do something, if you want to get an image quickly, you know, and you're starting out in photography, rule of thirds works just fine. But the problem is the only thing that I don't get with this is it's kind of like, here's rule of thirds overlaid on your images. Well, that's fine. And it helps you work out why an image is good. That's kind of fine. But there's tons of other stuff. And rule of thirds doesn't work on square images, for example. So if you put a square image up, you tend to find that central creates a more point of interest, or Fibonacci creates it if you're talking about different ratios opposed to 3:2. So it's a great starting point, but it's not the end of the world. It's not the be-all and end-all of taking a picture. You want a horizon. Don't start thinking about putting it on the lower third or the upper third point. Put it in the middle of the image, and it'll give you a different effect entirely. If you want to do this just to kind of get started, to learn the basics of composition, I think it's a great tool, but there's lots of images you could put into that grid. They won't line anything up, and they're still great images. And if you look at the picture of Obama that we've got here, he's roughly on the third point, but I think if you actually moved Obama so his head and the focus of his body was on the central line there, that third point, I don't think it would be as good an image. I think I always talk about more with framing images about balance. Looking at, for me, this image is the distance from the top of his head from the base of the chair to the bottom of the image. He's balanced in that central location, and that, I think, provides more impact than the thirds point in that image. I think it's a great example of where the rule of thirds is a guideline, but not a defining issue.
Not a necessity. Not a necessity.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex? Rule of thirds or turds?
As Ewan says, it's a good starting point, but that's the end of it. You're going to get people being critical of good images and not understanding why the image is good, because it doesn't work in your rule of thirds. Mm. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about this very image because people might not be watching the video, but it's almost a good image. But what's wrong with it has got nothing to do with rule of thirds. What's wrong with it is the foreground is cutting off the president's feet. Yeah? It's to me, that's made a mess of the image. The angle of the side of the chairs at the bottom of the image, it's at the wrong angle. There's things about that image that are so close to being right, and what's wrong with it has got nothing to do with the rule of thirds. So this image is proving a point. This image is saying, good picture, there's something wrong with it, let's look at rule of thirds. Well, that's not the answer, so why bother? You're going to get people that don't understand what they're looking at being critical, but for completely the wrong reasons.
That's exactly the point that I would make, is if you look at the image itself, I look at that image and the foreground bit doesn't bother me because he's hemmed in on all sides. It gives me the story in my head, and the story in my head is he's encircled and he's in contemplation. So something's obviously aggressive towards him that he's trying to create. You know, the pictures tell the story, not the composition tells the story necessarily. So Alex sees one thing with that foreground, I see something different.
Exactly. And I'm seeing something completely different as well. I mean, first and foremost, rule of thirds, turds, whatever you want to call it, never even thought about it when taking a picture, honestly. From a very amateur point of view here, yeah.
The point is, if you do, I mean, if you look in the back of nearly every camera, you will get a button that will put that grid on.
Yeah.
The grid you're looking at, you can get in a camera.
Certainly the compacts.
Yeah. But what I would say is, look at that for the first 3 months you've got your camera, and I'm not talking in the first 3 months you've got your new camera, the first 3 months you have a camera, and then that will then, when you're walking around outside, I mean, Carl, you did it when you were, you know, first on this, and I think you first got your iPhone, you listened to what made a good picture, you saw pictures because you were doing a photo show, then you went out with your iPhone and you just instinctively started framing pictures inside your church. And you framed the picture perfectly. Not because you looked at rules of thirds or anything, but you had trained yourself over a very short amount of time to see the image. And this is great to see an image, but not to be critical of someone else's. You know, that's the issue. It's a nice it's a nice way to learn, but once you've learned, or once that's instilled in your head, don't sit there looking at grids, because the more regimented you are, you'll be trying to fit something into the grid, but losing the picture because you're not looking at it as a whole. Mm. So, yeah, good starting point, but once you've got it in your head, forget about looking at the grid.
Go more with the gut than the grid.
Yeah, your gut will tell you.
Title.
Oh, well, thank you very much, sir. This podcast and all the other ones on this fine network that you let's just say it's without you guys, without UK2, it wouldn't be possible. UK2.net. They keep us alive. They keep us afloat. Ewan said that they've signed on for what, another 2 years? Is that right?
Yeah, I probably said that about 6 months ago. So maybe it's about a year and a half now. But
okay, so a year and a half now. Okay, see, this is what happens when you don't host the show for so long. So you just kind of forget about these things. But no, for the fine folks over UK2.net, they really are great. You guys are obviously buying the stuff, so it's helping keep all these podcasts alive, keep us on the air, and it's deeply, deeply appreciated. If you guys are looking for great web hosting, they've got you covered. Domain names, they got you covered. Just go to British Tech News, British Tech News, British Tech Network.com, British Tech Network.com. You'll see their sponsor and friends down there. You're going to see UK2.net. Click on that, it'll take you through over there. And you and I know we've got some codes right now, and you know about the codes. And
yeah,
I
just click on the sponsors link. Just click on the sponsors link, and the codes are all there. That's fine.
Oh, cool. Well, there you go. That's simple as could be. UK2. Thank you. That rhymed. Let's move on to the questions, shall we?
Sure.
Oh, yes. Yes. First question comes from Eric. He says, hi, Ewan and the guys. I've been messing with sharpening my photos in the past few weeks since listening to the shows. I wanted to know if you have a few words of wisdom as to how to ensure I sharpen my photos to the right degree. I have to say that my results have been mixed. Who wants to? I guess we'll start with you, Ewan, on this sharpening. Something we get asked a lot on this show.
There isn't a right answer. That's the trouble with it. I mean, if you're looking at the percentage of sharpening and the radius that you select for that sharpening to be applied to, what sharpening's doing is looking at the edges of things and trying to gather those edges together to create definition. And you would want to do that based on the first one is output. So if you want a big portrait or a canvas or something like that, you're probably going to sharpen to very little. Whereas if you want an image for a website that's going to be 25 pixels by 25 pixels, you'd want to sharpen harder on the original and then shrink it down. Also, watch out for your ISO, because if you've got high ISOs, 800s, 1600s, 3200s, you're going to naturally have more grain. And the sharpness, Alex can correct me here, but sharpness is the wrong word to use, but there'll be naturally more definition because of the ISO. So you need to sharpen less, because if you then sharpen on top of that, you'll probably get either a moiré effect, which is like a herringbone effect that appears unnaturally across things that are already sharpened or already patterned, and then you'll end up with something that's really grainy and awful and horrible. It is a playing thing. It's have a play with it and use your command Z to go back if you're in Photoshop. You know, get yourself used to seeing and trying. But those are the kind of things: distance, ISO, grain that's already there, size of output.
Okay,
I can't remember.
Anything to add, Alex?
Yeah, there's a few rules that I go by. One, over sharpening is it's criminal. You know, I'd rather see a soft image. I mean, let's remember,
there's no unsharpening tools, really. Yes, that
exactly
work.
But
once you've done it, you're screwed.
You look at all the historical images that you've looked at and admired, there's not a sharp one amongst them. Sharpness is quite a modern phenomena. You know, lenses weren't sharp until the 1970s. You could spend as much money as there was in the world on the lens. It wasn't sharp. You know, it was sharper. And now they've got to the point with digital output, we see things as lines and dots, and there's an edge to things. Things never had an edge till we went digital. You know, photos never had sharp edges. You think they do. You start blowing them up because they're analog. You can sort of just keep zooming in, if you like, with, you know, an analog function to zoom in on things. And you'll see, oh, no, that's not sharp. It's just the dots per inch, which were, you know, more or less infinite to the grain of the film, was so much higher than anything we've got now, so much higher than any output we've got. It's like the retina display argument. You know, it's not sharp. It just looks sharp because our eyes aren't good enough to zoom in any further than they do. So just don't over-sharpen. And if you are ever worried, two things. One of the tricks I do, if I'm not sure, if I'm using Photoshop, I do an extra layer. I copy the layer. I sharpen, if you like, maybe even over-sharpen the layer I want, and then I change the opacity, because then it's not just like going back, you'll get a different effect. And the other thing I would use is, if you're going to sharpen hard-ish, and use something like the history brush to brush away the sharpening in certain areas, because emphasizing some small sharp areas is all you normally need. You don't Very, very, very seldom do you need to sharpen the whole of an image. So either using a sharpening brush, which I've got to admit is a bit of a pain because they work very, very slowly, or do a layer, copy the layer, sharpen that layer, then selectively use the history brush to wipe away some sharpening, and then slightly lessen the opacity so the unsharpened image comes through, and then you can get the perfect balance, but you can get it on sliders rather than having to redo, undo, and all the rest of it. So that's what I do. It's a shortcut, and the effects you get are far superior to anything you try and do when you try and do a tiny bit at a time and keep having a look. That's just a trick that I come up with, and you can have it for free.
No charge necessary. Next question comes from Matthew, and it says, hi, guys. I'm a new listener of your photo podcast, having listened to the Mac show for a long time and not known about the other great shows you guys do. I think his question's kind of long, so I think he's buttering us up, guys. I've been looking at upgrading my Sony Alpha 100 that he bought about 5 years ago for some time, as it's starting to limit my photography. I mean in terms of direct access buttons, as the image quality is good but suffers in low light, and also AF is slow. I feel that I am disadvantaged because I have not upgraded for so long, and a lot has changed in 5 years, which is true. A lot has changed in 5 years. A lot's changed in 5 months, honestly. In particular, I'm not sure if a good secondhand body, an older model, would do me just as well as a brand new revision. I opted for the Sony originally because it was much cheaper than the Nikon D80 and the Canon equivalent back then, whenever I had the kit, have a kit lens and a 50mm f1.7 for the Sony, so I'm not exactly tied to any one system. I'm really looking at investing around £1,000 plus in a body, so I think I'm looking at another crop sensor body, but I'm totally confused first the brands and then the models. I picked up the D7000 and the 60D7D, and the Nikon does feel very robust, but when I look at secondhand listings and eBay for cameras such as the original 5D, 50D, and the D700, I wonder if I should opt for something older, as the secondhand market is very good at the moment. I would rather like the option to progress to full frame eventually, so I was thinking about jumping to Canon or Nikon from Sony, as a C and N, as C and N have very good models at the full frame, but I heard some discussions recently and read some reviews and see that Sony are really coming forward with offerings such as A77 and the A99 model. I should have said what I shoot, and is mainly on weekend landscapes, architecture, and family portraits. Thank you for the great shows, which I'm currently going through iTunes so I can catch up on the photo show. Thank you, Matthew, for that very long question.
The answer's no.
Sorry?
The answer's no.
Pardon?
Who starts? Who starts? Ewan says no. I guess Alex will say yes.
Yes. Yes, I'll say yes. All right. If you're talking about an amateur plus, if you like, level of camera, £1,000 was it, or dollars? I think it was pounds.
Pounds, yeah.
Is more than enough money. I take it you want to stay DSLR. There's an awful lot more in that range than there used to be. There used to be maybe two cameras from each manufacturer that you can go for, but I mean, you can start at £300, £400 in Nikon with a 3200. You know, not the price, the model. Then you can go up to the 5200 watts. The 700 is still an amazing camera. You've mentioned the 7000. You get so much more for your money. All I would say is, I don't know what a D600 is. Does anyone know? I should look it up.
D600, no. 600D.
All right.
650D is going to run you about £600. And the the 60D is going to run you about £800. So if you talk about the Sony, the A99's £1,600. So that's over your budget anyway to start with, even though some of your lenses will still fit it.
But what I would say is, I would have said a year ago, stick with Sony, because Sony are the best value out there for the money. Not anymore.
No.
Nikon and Canon have both come back, and Sony are the ones that have now got to do something.
They're overpriced.
Yeah, they are, but they never used to be. Nikon and Canon were so overpriced that Sony looked reasonable.
Yeah,
I would have said there's a plethora of Nikon cameras. I wouldn't. You know what? You're talking about a secondhand body. That's all very well, but there's been such advances in what you get for your money now. You're saying £1,000. I would have said a year ago what you got for £1,000, you could get for £400 now. That's the difference. You could get, the Nikon D3200. And now I don't know what that is, but I think that's, you know, under £400, isn't it? You know, and that's the equivalent of what you would have got. You have £367 from Jessops.
Mm.
So stick with Nikon and Canon. I mean, people are going to criticize me, but at the moment they are, if you like, they're underpriced. You know,
don't say that.
They are. At is that level.
Is that really possible?
Well, at that level, they are. You know that you talk about, you know, over time how much things were, and, you know, in the old days, a house used to cost you a quarter of what it does for your money these days and all the rest of it. I would have said cameras, the middle range cameras, are half the actual price as they were 2 or 3 years ago. The middle range products are half what they would have cost you. So £1,000 is going to get you a decent body if you go to Nikon or Canon, and enough lenses to take you back, well back to where you are now within your Sony range. And remembering you can still sell them Sony lenses and, you know, make a bit of money back on them.
Mm. I would say, for my money, the first thing to say in that question is full frame sensor is not an aspiration. Absolutely, it's not an aspiration. When you take a picture, you take a picture of what you see. If what you see is too big for what you've got, stand back. If it's too small, walk forwards.
Forward.
You fill the frame with sensor. It doesn't. You fill the frame with interest. It doesn't matter whether it's a full frame sensor or not. What's going to matter is if you've bought crop lenses like the EFS series or the DC series for Sigma, and then you want to stick them on full frame, you won't be able to. So be careful if you do go down the crop sensor route, that the lenses that you buy are an option then for later on if you do want to go to full frame. But I don't think you should. I think you should buy a camera that's the right fee, that gives you what you want, buy the lenses for it. If you're buying stuff that's EFS or DC, then it's going to give you the exact millimeterage, the focal length that fits that crop sensor anyway. So a 35mm EFS is a 35mm EFS when you put it on the thing. And if you buy a 50mm that will fit a full frame, you know it's going to be a 75mm on a crop frame sensor. But nobody takes pictures based on what... you just know if it's wide angle or lower angle, or if it's variable or non-variable. Forget about full frame. And it's marketing bull. You fill the frame with interest. That's all there is to it. If it's not full, stand forwards, walk back. That's it. Just buy a camera that you can afford that's got good variability. Alex has gone through the Nikons there and he's listed a few. If you're talking about buying a D60D, very, very good. If you've only got the money and you want to spend on a few extra lenses, I shoot professionally with a 600D. I bought it just to try the video out. I made a video for London Underground that Boris Johnson saw and loved it, and Alex saw and thought the quality was great.
Mm.
That was a 600D, mate. That's 600 quid's worth of camera. Very, very acceptable. I've just got, for low light, I've just bought a 6D that'll be here this afternoon. In terms of video, I'm going to set both up and video exactly the same thing and see what comes out, but I can guarantee you almost that the video quality won't change. Mm. So there's great cameras out there for 600 quid, 500 quid. Go buy them.
But Jim, they in the really chat room, are great, though.
They are great. Dim saying in the chat room, the Nikon D90, you'll pick a Nikon D90 up for a couple of hundred quid. That'll give you 800 quid to spend on some second-hand lenses. I did a thing this week. I didn't win many, but in terms of prices, I looked at buying a 50mm f1.8 lens. They were 60 quid second-hand. Less than that at times. There was a 2.0 35mm that went for £80. There's good lenses out there that are going. If you put the right bid in, you can get, you know, 60 or 80 quid will get you a lens quite comfortably. You'll end up with three or four of them out of 200 quid. So look around. But forget full frame and crop sensor as being an aspiration. It's just marketing bull.
But basically, what we're telling Matthew is go in, try it out, Take a little piece of Ewan with you, and then take a little Alex with you. Pick it up. If it feels like it's underpriced, go for it.
Well, we said the same thing, though. He said Nikon, I said Canon, but that's because that's who we, you know, who we should be. We said the same things. You know,
I mean, the equivalent of a 5200 is a 650D. A 650D is 400 quid. You know, you're talking about £1,000. For 600 quid, you're going to get some beautiful lenses. You don't need something. Get one fast lens. That's all you need. You know, if you're going to do something and you're going to need a 2.8 or a 1.8 or something for indoor shooting, well, why the hell would you need a zoom? Unless you're going to be doing indoor shooting in Canterbury Cathedral, you're not going to be that far away from people.
No, you know, he's doing landscapes and things. Yeah.
Well, then who cares
about family portraits? 1.8?
Yeah. There just you go. Don't believe the hype. I mean, if that's the one thing that I like about, well, obviously the company, but British Tech Photos, don't believe the hype. The numbers don't matter. You don't need a 36 megapixel camera unless you do something for a living where you've got to do posters. You don't need it. You know, don't waste your money. Just because if they've got a new camera every week and the numbers get bigger and bigger, please don't believe that rubbish. Go to the shop. They'll be more than happy to see you in there. They'll probably make you a cup of tea just for turning up, you know? Just go there. Have a go. Speak to the guy behind there. If he's wearing a Nikon t-shirt, don't be surprised if he wants to sell you a Nikon, right? But go to an independent shop, explain what your needs are, and they will be more than happy to help you.
And Matthew, if you're married, don't forget at the end of the day, ask the wife. That's the most important part.
Well, that's the point. If you tell her you're going to spend £1,500 and you came back and you've only spent £800, you got £700 worth of cuddles and you'll be able to get away with murder for months.
Do you want me to say this last question for next week, Ewan, or do you want to go hit up?
No, I want you to do it because you're going to think that I've picked it just because of the person that sent it in, but I haven't. It was there originally. Go ahead.
Oh, well, lovely. You want me to try and... I'm not pronouncing the last name, just so you know. I'm not going to try and do it. I'm just going to say 80 from Mumbai. We love you. Thanks for your question. Here it is. Hello, Photo Show. I love the show. The question is about lunar photography and the ISS. I know that Kevin mentioned this a few episodes back, but can you give me a definitive settings to shoot the moon and the ISS correctly? I say correctly, but I mean what gives me the best chance as an amateur of getting a wow shot. Thanks. Again, that's Eddie from Mumbai.
It's Adi. Bhattacharjee. That'll do.
Bhattacharjee.
I'll probably say it wrong.
There you go. No, you probably did too. Yeah. So.
I do it at night. I thought that's a bit too obvious. I'm amazed you laughed. Sorry.
Okay.
Me trying desperately not to look in the camera through embarrassment.
Pictures of the moon. Alex is always going on about F11 being the sweet spot for your lens. So F11's a good idea. And then try and keep your exposure equal to your ISO. There you go. So if you're shooting 1/125th ISO 100.
Simplify, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So shoot it at night and do those little tweaks.
Yeah.
A good tripod. Sturdy tripod. And don't be... You know, you're talking about digital photography here. Keep the exposure under 2 seconds because of... We all move. And you leave your lens open for... You know, you leave it open rather than more than a couple of seconds. It goes blurry and you're sitting there going, hold on a minute, why? I'm sure I've got the tripod standing. We're all moving at stupidly fast. I can't remember the theme tune to that program that I can't remember, the one with the four scientists on it. But there's a theme tune about how fast we're all travelling around. We're whizzing around at silly speeds. So be aware of that. But take a few exposures. And also... One of the things you'll find is if you take different exposures off of it, I did some almost identical shots recently. With one exposure, I got the moon in the most amazing coming through all these clouds, but exactly the same shot, so the clouds hadn't moved. I re-exposed on the clouds and I underexposed on the clouds. So the moon was, it didn't look that bright. It looked like a rock rather than a blaring light, and you couldn't see any clouds. So in the same exposure, I've got one where the moon is, you know, it's really bright, and you've got these beautiful clouds. It looks like some sort of celestial magic. But it's all to do with the length of exposure and where you take the metering off of. So do 3 or 4 exposures and you'll be blown away how different the same picture looks. So you want the bow factor.
Sorry? Go ahead.
If you want the bow factor, then just change your exposure and you won't believe the same shot is so utterly different.
Just so you know that Alex probably did underground work for the Twilight film series.
I mean, the other thing with ISS, and this is always something that puzzles me, if you look at all the images that go up from Twist IS and Virtual Astro and those kind of people on Twitter, and they retweet them, everyone takes a 30-second image, and they end up with this dotted trace line that goes across the sky. If you've got a DSLR, the chances are you've got a bulb setting on it. So cramp your lens down, keep your ISO low, and expose it once you see the ISS, let it go across, and then look at the result that you get. And if you've overexposed, cramp your lens down a bit more. And if you've underexposed, open it up a bit more. And it's probably going to be by the following night. Generally speaking, your ISS passes will be sort of 10 days worth will come along, and then they'll go around on a different trajectory. So let it come across, take an image, see what it is, then do another image the following night and try and get that single trail that appears. And the other thing is, if you shoot in RAW, don't be tempted to just leave the image, go, oh, it's underexposed, the line's not very visible. If you make that colder image, change your thermals down to the blue end of the spectrum, you'll find that the whites will pop out more, you'll get more stars, you'll get more ISS pattern, you know, line, etc. But have a play with bulb. Bulb is not is vastly underused. Manual with bulb. Then we're talking, that's the big balls end of photography.
There you go. Play with the bulb.
I live on bulb.
Yeah. I shoot on bulb.
Yeah. Big Bang Theory is what I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay. Got you.
And that's nothing to do with shooting on bulb.
Chat room said it was Monty Python.
Yeah, they did that as well, didn't they? There was a slightly lesser.
For some reason, I had Laverne and Shirley in my head, so I don't know why.
Something like 20,000 miles an hour the Earth spins, isn't it?
17,500.
There you go. There's me sitting there waking it out, working it out, and he just knows the answer.
If you people have got a question for our fine physicist on this show, please send them in to is it BritishTechPhoto@gmail.com, Ewan? Because
BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com.
Okay, BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com. BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com, and get your questions in, and whoever will be hosting this show, hopefully we'll be able to read them better than I have and actually get the names correctly. So please send them in.
Bhattacharjee.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, Adi Bhattacharjee.
Yeah, Adi. I mispronounced your first name, Ewan mispronounced your last name, so we do hope you'll come back.
I'm going for Mumbai.
Mr. and Mrs.
Guys, it's been a pleasure. This has been fun.
Thank you for coming along and being our special host.
Well, very merry, happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, sorry that wasn't very Christmassy.
A trip down memory lane.
Yes. Ewan, where can we get a hold of you?
I'm at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and you can... I haven't got a commercial site up at the minute. I've bought Ography Squared, which is... going to be the new company name, but I haven't put much up there. We're not going to be back with the photo show until... the 12th, I think. The 12th of... 11th or 12th? 11th.
January?
Yeah, of January. We're not going to come back for... because I'm working that weekend. So,
11th. Yeah, 11th.
Straight back to work after Christmas. So we went back till the 11th of January. So we got 2 to 3 weeks off. So.
There you go. All right. Alex, where can we get a hold of you on our long break?
You can get me at Alex G. Fox. You know, in that 2 to 3 weeks break, I might try and learn something about photography. I'm going to come back with all knowledge and 17,500 miles an hour. Did you know that? That's how fast the Earth travels. Did you know that?
Yes.
We do know.
Don't look,
and Teresa in the chat room says, great to see you back on the photo show, Carl.
Oh, thank you, Teresa. Sweet. It was a pleasure. I don't know how well it went, probably as well as it always did, which is never that well. But it was great to be here. I enjoyed it. If anybody's bothered, you can find me on Twitter at Kyle Swagger. And of course, check out all the shows on the British Tech Network going to British Tech Network.
Vote for us over Christmas as well. Vote for BTN. We've got 6 shows at Mac, Big Gamer, Media, iOS, and Photo. You can vote for us on BritishTechNetwork.com. Keep voting over Christmas. Keep as many votes going in as you possibly can, because voting closes in the middle of January. So we'll only be just back for the last week, just before voting closes. So please, vote. over the holiday period.
Would you please? Everybody,
and a
very
Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yes, and a Happy New Year. Ta-da.
Goodbye. Did you know Lord Nelson had a vote?
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.